Gentlemen, let's begin. So there's much to talk about weddings in this there's some two recent stories. My son told me he was at a shiva in Yerushalayim, and he saw the ksuba of the Nifter from 60 years ago, which is written by Rav Moshe Feinstein himself. And he filled it in, and there were two unbelievable things. One, the place he wrote, Forest Hills, which is not, we usually don't do these days, we usually write the Borough of Queens, but I guess maybe in those days every neighborhood was considered separate. Someone told me that Rav Moshe that she tells about Erevin, that every neighborhood in Queens is separate, whatever. And number two, at this wedding, apparently there was some kind of a thing with the number five. You know, now they were talking about the nines, you know. They were having some five. So on the bottom, believe it or not, after the regular text of the Ksuba, he wrote down that the chosn accepts upon itself an additional tosefta of the Ksuba, so like 5,555 shalatos abris in Rav Moshe's handwriting. I kid you not. And then the Adam sign, you know, a kol shor of a kaim, the Adam sign again. I saw it by my own eyes. That was one thing. So once I saw this, I asked to get a hold of the ksuba that I told you about, the Rav Moshe that I was at the wedding. My was wrong. I was made a mistake. I thought Rav Moshe took a carrot and went for kanina. No, true. It's not true. Someone else wrote the kanina, a much nicer handwriting, or rock print. There was no carrot. I was right. At the bottom it said that this is the word of the kanina is written between the lines, and this is Kiyum. That was written at the bottom. So that part was right. But it wasn't Rav Moshe's own handwriting, so I wanted to clarify that. So ksuba issues are always fun. Where's the place? We spoke about the place last time, am I correct? Where the place is? So where's the atrium? Pasha Press in Spring Valley. One of the distinguished Rosh Hashivas from our yeshiva got married in the atrium, and his grandfather was a Masada Kedushin, and he wrote down Monsi, and he told him, no, it's Spring Valley. He went to his car, always have to have an extra ksuba, took another ksuba, filled it out, and he wrote Spring Valley. Anyway, I was at a wedding on Monday night, 3 days ago. And the Masagdash, Rav David Feinstein Shlita, the older of our generation, and I read the ksuba. So I know what it said. Muncie, New York. So I was like, you know. They say Masa. It said Masa. I think my daughter wrote that Masa. I said, Rav Moshe's writing that Masa. Anyway, so it's not Makiv. It's on the border, and there's different municipalities. For taxes, it's one thing. To the mailbox, it's another thing. It's all good. But I'm just letting you know that these things can come up with these. And don't sweat it. It's hard to pass a ksuba. B'shas HaTzchak, after the fact, almost everything is good. All right? Yes, sir.
You asked me to remind you about the ksuba. The woman is a ksuba or not?
Ah, very good. If the following issue exists, we talked about it last time. If the woman's not really a ksuba, thank you for reminding me. So Rav Moshe is a shiva about this too. Let's say she's not a psula. Let's say the husband knows she's not a psula. Take that kind of a case. So Rav Moshe, there's nothing wrong with writing psula because he's obligated himself to more money. You can write more money. You can write all you want. So in effect, from his perspective, it's really a tosefes ksuba. He knows the truth. She's only coming to a certain amount of money and a smaller amount for a b'ul than a psula. He wants to undertake upon himself. So it's called ksuba instead of tosefes ksuba. That doesn't passel. You can mekabel anything you want. I mentioned, I think last time, she had the goyish boyfriend, that's a problem. If she had a goyish boyfriend, then she's no longer eligible for a coin. Follow? And if you write down psultador, then I say, well, oh, Rabbi Stein did the wedding. And he wrote down psultador, oh, must be she's a psultador, and then she must be eligible to a coin if she loses her husband 50 years from now. So that's a problem. So, did I talk about the two ksubas last time? We didn't talk about that? We'll talk about it now. Once that's such a case, fellow goes back. He's already a grandfather, Baruch Hashem. But he was getting married. He asked me to do the wedding. And he calls me. I meet the Chosan Kala. And she says, you know, I have a little embarrassing, candid admission to make. I was not from. Not a fortune. She wasn't brought up from at all. And even those days, to these days, it's nothing to talk about. But already those days, if you weren't from, you know, there were little boyfriends and, you know, the chule. She had a goyish boyfriend. She was Nivela L'Akam. She was Psulim and Akuna. But didn't want to publicize that fact. She now has a full balas tshuva. What should she do? I asked her, them, does anybody else know this fact besides Yitanga to me? So he said, yeah, there's one friend, you know, when he was going out with this young lady, and he just was, you know, he wanted to talk it over with someone confidentially, you know, should this be something which should prevent them from going through with the shidduch? So this one friend knows. He said, tell the friend to come early. So the friend came early, and I was there early. Misaglish should try to be early. It's one of the few things Misaglish should try to do, be on time. We filled out a ksuba, which was the lowest sum of money. We could have written Be'ulta, though, which I guess would be more technically correct. We didn't want to do that. We wrote down Itasada. No need to spell it out. Put the lower amount of money. He and I signed it. Gave it to the chosn, put this in your pocket. When you go to the yichud room, you hand it to your wife. This is the real ksuba. Then we went through the motions of a regular ksuba, sulta da, two other eidim, read under the chuppah. After the chuppah, I got my hands on it from the kala, and I took it and with me and put it away. Destroyed it. So there was an official ksuba that was canned, and the real ksuba that was filled up in private. Yes?
The fake ksuba, isn't that a false star?
That's why I threw it out.
You want to have him sign a false star?
Well, the Aiden who saw it had no idea it was a false star. And it wasn't, again, remember, the fellow was willing to write a higher number. He just had it out for the fact that she had a non-Jewish boyfriend. What does he care to write a higher number? So it wasn't it's okay. Now, Tashkin Balecha Alpha, I don't think we violated that because I told him in advance, they're going to have to give it to me, and I'm going to put it away. That's what we did. There are cases where people read things which are not there. They say once that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was asked to read a ksuba, but it wasn't, you know, what everyone thought. He says, no, I'm a good person to read it because I slur my words, he says, all the time, so I'll slur it. He didn't whisper it. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't read the ksuba. Read the beginning, the end, they leave it at the middle. And they often don't write psulta da because it's they want to do Berzik Chucha V'Tlula in some of those places. They're doing weddings there for totally non-from people, the Rabbanut. They almost never read the ksuba. They read the beginning, and then they skip. That's what it is, huh? It's okay. B'chule, yeah. So I guess you can do that in America too if you want to. I just was talking to yesterday, I said a case where there was someone who didn't want her father's name in the ksuba because her father was abusive and she had a stepfather. So the rabbi said, listen, I can't help you because you had to write your natural father's name in it, but you know what? We read a different name. So the ksuba said Chaim the father, and then they read Yaakov the father. Kriyaksiv. You have to be quick, because you know I've read things where I was told to do Kriyaksiv and I almost forgot. Like, you know, you slip because you're used to things. You know, it was a case of a divorced woman, but they didn't want anyone to know that she was divorced. I mean, it wasn't such a secret. So I had a case like this, a case of a Geirus. Charles adopted, but no one knew she was adopted. So yeah, right, she was a Geirus. So the same thing. Anyone else know? Yeah, the other rabbi knows. Her rabbi knows. I was his rabbi and her rabbi. Tell him to come early. Okay, well, Brother Ksuba says Geirus to da. And the same truck. We gave that. That's the real Ksuba. And then they read a regular Ksuba. Again, Geirus to da, if the Geirus is less than 3 years old, you have to write a higher amount to the ksuba. It's a mishnah ksuba safyad aleph. If you write a lower amount, it's a problem. I went to Rabbi Zalman Lechemi about this once. He told me that what I suggested, he agreed with me, is that some tosefes ksuba. For us, the tosefes is way, way more than the ikar. So the tosefes ksuba, even written for a giyurta, is many, many times out of the real ksuba of a psula da. So you're not going to say to be a perchas the psula mi masayim, because you're giving it much more than masayim. Okay, even though it's designated as tosefes ksuba. Before we had it was designated as ksuba, it was really tosefes. Now in this case it was tosefes, really the ksuba. All right, flexible. It's a permeable border between the two of them. All right, gentlemen, you with me? Okay. So, fine. I was going to tell you the story what happened at my wedding with the Rav. Did I tell you that last week? So that's the story we told already. I want to make sure I don't leave out the stories. It's important. Stories teach you things. I want to talk and say a word about, since we're talking about stories, about Chuppas Nida. Chuppas Nida is now, Baruch Hashem, avoidable. It wasn't always that way, because even with the pills didn't always work. They don't always have pills, Bichlal. There's something called Aegestin, A-Y-G-E-S-T-I-N, which is a drug which simply prevents the period from happening. And my recommendation, and I'm not an MD, but just based on past performance, that's the preferred way to go about this in case it's a problem. The best way, of course, is to have no medicines. If a woman is a young woman and she's a regular period, she sees every 30 days, she try to plan the wedding at the right time. And if you do, then just the best pills are no pills. However, if things are unable to put at the right time because of other family considerations, who knows what, so you're at the wrong time. So my vote is to go on this thing called Aegestin. You go on it the last month, and it just stops everything. When you go off it, everything goes back to normal. This is in contradistinction to birth control pills. Birth control pills, which many women go on as soon as they get engaged, they get a ring and birth control pills. So I'm not happy with them for two reasons, three reasons. One, they somehow stain. And when they stain, it's a big problem. Last minute, you're in tzaras. Two, when you go off them after you get married, if you've been on it for 3 months, your period can go haywire. And then the first few months of marriage can be very challenging. Three, women, once they have the pills, they like the pills. They stay on the pills for a year. And I don't like that either. I spoke about that a little bit before, that that's not, to me, not a proper way to begin a Torah marriage. So that's why I'm not a fan of these pills, even though many, many women are taking them now, if for only the purpose of regulation. I think it's just not such a good idea. Just give me what I think. Okay? Good. I want to talk a little bit about prenups, and we mentioned prenups a little bit. You will have the prenups in front of you. There are some halachic issues about the prenup I want to address at the present time. Okay? There are a number of halachic issues. I'm just going to tell you a story right now. I was was contacted today by a husband of a Kala teacher who was worried about the marriage being, a wedding that was going to take place. He was a little worried about it. And so he wanted him to sign a prenup. And there are two rabbis who are on either side. He wants to know if I can speak to them, see if they'd be amenable. So one of them is a musbach of our yeshiva. I called him. He says he doesn't do it, but he has hands off. They want to do it. That's fine. The other one is a rabbi of a chassidish kehillah. It just so happens I know him personally, by a fluke. One of the biggest chassidus in the city. I called him today, and I actually faxed him. He doesn't. He said, you have email? He says, please. I went as far as a fax. That's already a nat chassidus, although that's pretty advanced. So I faxed him just now. I just have it in front of me. When I gave my phone numbers to call me back with the copy of this prenup. And I told him that I gave him two names that he would recognize who endorsed the prenup. One was Rabbi Libris Zatzal, considered the Masada Gittin in Brooklyn after many years of being the one in the Bronx. And he knew that name. And I mentioned the name of Rabbi Osher Weiss in Yerushalayim. He knew that name too. Because, whatever, the Chassidus in our somewhat related to each other, both coming from the Sansa dynasty. We'll leave it at that. Okay. So there are halachic issues. I want to discuss them a little bit. When this came out the first time in a sort of a raw form, the original piece of paper that was signed by Rabbi Salman Nechemia, Rabbi Vadi Yosef, Rabbi Symbolist, and here by Rabbi Dalia Schwartz, Rabbi Libis, five signatures they had on it. So, and the RCA was, you know, promoting it. So at the time, Rabbi Bleich Shalita wrote a piece about it. It's in a sefer called Benesiva Salacha. You can read it. And he quotes the source. He says that he has certain complaints about it. And I want to discuss his complaints and see what, you know, what the postkin was saying about it. His major complaint was he felt it's a problem we call in our language asmachta. Many of you learned Sanhedrin last year. Who learned Sanhedrin last year? Okay, so you know, I'm going to show a little bit what asmachta means. Asmachta means, well, it's not clear what it means, but it may mean an obligation which is taken on a contingency. If this happens, then I owe you X amount of money. Or if this happens, I'll sell you my field, as the case may be. So the Gemara speaks about asmachta in a number of places. Sanhedrin, in the case of the gambling situation, it's in Bava Metzia, in a number of places in Bava Metzia. It's in Bava Basra at the end of the Masechta. It's in the Dorim. A few places in Shas where asmachta is discussed at some length. And the question is this prenup run afoul of the asmachta problem? So, according to some authorities, asmachta is only if the obligation is exaggerated. It's based on the Mishnah in Bava Metzia. Im over v'lo aved ashal b'metva, if I will leave your land foul, I'm a sharecropper, I'll pay you what I cost you, I'll pay you with metav sadeo, which is more than I really have to. That's not an asmachta. Which the Pesach Tshuva quotes in Ebenezer, if the amount is a little bit more than what makes perfect logical sense, it's not asmachta. The same as metva is worth more than beinonis, it's not considered asmachta. Pesach Tshuva. Im over below al aver hashalom al fazuzi, pay $1,000, which is much more than what the loss is. That's asmachta, and you don't have to pay the money. So the question that becomes, if a person agrees to pay a certain amount of money to a spouse on a daily basis, in the case the couple breaks up, which if you read the prenup, that's what it says, assume it's not an exaggerated sum, it should be potentially not a problem of asmachta, because it's over below aved hashalom b'metva. I'll pay you what you need to live, okay, maybe it's in the high end, but it's not out of whack. That's one possibility why it might be not be a problem of asmachta. An additional reason why it shouldn't be an exaggerated sum, because if it's an exaggerated sum, you know, very, very high, it may be considered in the category of knas, a fine. When it comes to a knas, if you look carefully in Siman Kuf Lamed Daled in Ebenezer, you'll see a person is imposed upon him a financial obligation by from the outside. If you will not give the get, he has to pay that money. That's called a get meusa. It's a forced get. If he accepts it upon himself, then the Ramah says it's no good. The chatchila, it's good be the end. Come back to that. But we don't want to get involved in the Ramah. We want to do things like chatchila. So we, by having a non-exaggerated sum, it's not construed as a penalty, it's construed as a chiyuv of mizonos. Rabbi Bleich happens to hold a leniency over here. He thinks that as long as you construe it as mizonos, no matter how much, it could be $1 million a day, doesn't matter, it's mizonos, not called a knas. That's not so simple. Many people can disagree with him and say, no, if it's exaggerated, it would be a knas. So again, in our situation, we're trying not to exaggerate it, we're giving an amount of money, which is very reasonable per day. Fine. So it's not a knas. maybe not an asmachta because of the opinion of the Rishonim will say, if it's not exaggerated, it's not an asmachta. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch seem to have a different view, and they seem to say that even if it's not exaggerated, there's going to be a problem of asmachta. Any contingency obligation runs afoul of asmachta. However, there is an antidote. There's the Gemara Masechet Nedarim Chav Zayin called a kinyan me'achshav v'bezin choshev. Kinyan me'achshav is to pick up a handkerchief, or you admit to having picked up a handkerchief. Me'achshav is effective immediately. V'bezin choshev, in an esteemed bezin. This, according to the Gemara, works. The Rambam has a unique sheet about asmachta. Quote the Rambam, asmachta means there's no kinyan. If there was a real kinyan, it never runs a problem of asmachta. That leads to a shverikayin in the Rambam, and the best answer is given by the Evan Ha'osel and others, that the Rambam distinguishes between a hakna and a hischaivus. When it comes to a hakna, if you are makna with a chalipin or the like, there's no problem asmachta. Kol derem asmachta is the problem that there wasn't a kinyan. If it's the kinyan, there's no problem asmachta. If this is, we call it his chayvus, an obligation, the Rambam has a unique opinion that his chayvus can take effect just by word. I hereby obligate myself to you $1,000. According to all we show him, it's null and void. Unless you even pick up a handkerchief or write a star. Well, the Rambam is effective. But only if it's unconditional. If it's conditional, then it's not effective. But if you write a star, become a kinyan, then it would seem that it is effective. There are problems with what they call Chachmei Sfarad and other situations. I can't go into all the details right now. I believe that according to the Rambam, a distinction must be drawn between Hakna and Eschaivus. Selling something or obligating yourself. When it comes to hakna, you're selling something or giving away something, an object, then as long as you have what we'll call kinyan me'achshav, certainly bezin choshev, there's no problem of asmachta. However, when it comes to a schaivis, an obligation, then we understand that according to the Rambam, it would be no good, even with a kinyan me'achshav, even with a bezin choshev, it would still be no good. Problem of asmachta. That being the case, this prenup that we have would, in my view, be asmachta according to the Rambam. That's not so good. Not so good. What makes matters much worse is Rav Yashiv passing like the Rambam. Shulvi wrote way back when in the 50s. It was a complicated Din Torah case, and he said, "You know, the Rambam says this, and therefore it's not valid the obligation of asmachta." I believe in transparency. I think that's correct. According to the Rambam, it's a problem of asmachta. Despite the kinyan me'achshav, despite the bezin choshev, despite it's not exaggerated, that's what I think. The big question, of course, becomes, do we pass like the Rambam? The Rambam and Hilchos Asmachta clearly is against the Rambam. We're Ashkenazim, so what are we worried about the Rambam for? Well, the Rambam is Ashkenazim. We follow the Rambam against the Rambam many, many times. Yes, sir?
Should
Sfarad
follow the Rambam?
Oh, what about Sfarad? And, you know, those are going to say that even if we're Ashkenazim, but it comes to these matters, we should be more careful. But the answer is this, generally, except for maybe Yemenites, the Sfarim don't follow the Rambam, they follow the Mechaba, Maran Bet Yosef. So the question becomes, does Maran Bet Yosef agree with the Rambam or does not agree with the Rambam? So I thought there's a riot from Simon Kuf Laman Aleph in Yechosh and Mishpat, Yechos Orev, that the Mechaba, in fact, does not follow the Rambam. Because the Mechaber says, he's definitely a Beis Yosef, it's greater length, that if a person is an Orev means you accept upon yourself as a guarantor. That's a classic asmachta case. The Gemara says Bahi Ano and the Baba Basra. But there can be some cases where there would be potential for asmachta. There, the Mechaber says that if you mekabel upon yourself, bekinyan me'achshav bezel choshev, you overcome asmachta. That's his chaybus. No, it's an obligation. Did the Rambam say that? Well, it's impossible for Rambam to have said that. I don't think he said it. If you look on the Tur quotes from the Rambam, and he quotes from the Bala Itur, and the Beis Yosef seems to work with an assumption that it's all from the Rambam, or the Rambam would agree to all of it, and he reaches that conclusion, that this Kinyan Be'achshav Bezal Choshev would work, whether it's like, sounds like it's, he holds the Rambam held that way, even though it's not really true. Itur said that Beferish Bala Itur. Bottom line is the Mechaber passing away. So once you pass, once the Mechaber and Ramah agree on something, you can no longer say Kimli, I hold from a different opinion, which is going to undermine this obligation based upon the Asmachta consideration. Okay. When the prenup was being done, I was asked to speak to Rabbi Yashiv. Zalman Lechemi told me, don't go. Ask me on Rabbi Shlomo Zalman too. I'm a good soldier. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman just told me very nicely, Lech LeDayanim. He didn't want to get involved. 1993. It's a full year after it was signed. And Zalman said, don't, you have already three chasimis. Don't try to go any higher. Of course he was right, but I was being pushed from here. So, I did things against my better judgment. Then I went to Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv said, he didn't say no. He said, go speak to Rabbi Morgenstern about it. That was his trusted aide. Rabbi David Morgenstern, who lives now in Ramat Shlomo. This is pre-Ramat Shlomo days. It was still a hill. It was living somewhere in somewhere in Gaula, in some unbelievably small apartment. I went to see him. He said, there are certain issues Rabbi Yashiv has. One of them was asmachta. Now, asmachta is a serious matter. And Rabbi Yashiv was a very serious person who took his responsibilities, the God of Lador, seriously. And he wrote many things and said many things sharply against many different things that were going on in the world in the last 20 years of his life. He never wrote anything against the prenup that he knew that we had. So I went to him actually a second time. The second time was also against my better judgment. Somebody wanted to print the whole thing with the this, with the that. It was something then called Moriah. That was where the original thing I talked about last week about the. Never told you about this? I didn't speak about it? I never spoke about the history of the prenup last week? No. Okay, we'll start from the beginning. I have to make a syllabus. You know what? I have to go on some say. I'm just shooting from the cuff. I can repeat myself. Forgive me if I repeat myself. I tell you my story this week of my shul that I did tell you? Nothing. Okay. Parshas told us that Shabbos was my anniversary of my prubba in Riverdale, which took place in 1973. Yeah. A few years ago. So I was elected shortly thereafter, and I became the Rav. Didn't know too much, but one thing I accepted upon myself then as a youngster, that I don't want to have any agunas on my watch. It was already then becoming a significant problem. The divorce rate was climbing, and the rabbis were saying, no, we have no teeth, we can't do anything. So I made a resolution to myself, I can't allow this to happen. I have to do something, make a shtadlis to do something about it. So what happened was, I had a honeymoon. 15 years, there were no agunas. There were two divorces, yes, there were. But both of them were handled in the secular court. No one, the woman didn't come to me, she wants to get. Garnished. So I was out of it, Baruch Hashem. Well then, all good things have to come to an end. About 15 years in, there's already a problem in the community, with the situation. I was trying to keep, I was counseling them. Nice people, both nice people. But they were drifting apart. And maybe he treated her inappropriately in a particular event, which he admitted to. He's a very honest person, this fellow. He is a very honest person. So after a while, she said, I want to get. Okay, I think she was entitled to the get based on what I knew about the situation from the two of them. I was involved with them for a period of time before that. She wants to get. We're now talking, gentlemen, 1989. So I'm already in the shul 15 years. This is the first time I'm facing this kind of situation. She wants to, I want to get. I want to get now. He says, oh no, I insist on X, Y, and Z. And if she won't give in on these things, I'm going to keep her in Aguna. I don't know if he really meant it, but that's what he said. It was like a red flag in front of a bull. It's exactly what I said 15 years before. I'm not going to let this pass. So I said, you know, you have to give it again. You have to. She wants to get now. Give it again now. You have promised you to go. You want to go to secular court? Fine. I'm not going to stop you. If you both agree to go there, you can go there. But you have to give it again now, because she, based on what I know, she's entitled to a get. Nope. What did he do? He exercised the inalienable right of every balabas. What's that? Come on, guys, you're asleep. What's that? A different rabbi, of course. Of course. So he went to Rabbi Rosenblatt, the RJC, told him a story, and El Chayid, he told the truth. And the rabbi listened to him very carefully. He said, you know, to give her a get. Two strikes. Okay, but you know, a lot of games have been won with only two counts, you know, a lot of. So he went to Rabbi Avi Weiss, the other, only three shuls of any significance at the time, and he told him a story. Honestly, he said, gotta give her a get. It's nice. He struck out, basically. But he still wouldn't give it. So it was around Sukkot, right? I think it was right after Sukkot of that year, 1989. I uncovered recently the letter that was sent to him, or was going to be sent to him. Spoke to him on the phone. He said, you know, the three of us agreed, you have to give her a get, and until you give her a get, we ask you not to attend the shuls, and if you come, we're going to have to stop the services. Hey, where else that happened? Since then, this is 1989, now it's 2016. You know how many shuls that did that? The three shuls got together in the neighborhood. I don't even know how many cases. But we did it back then. It was a little private shul of retirees that weren't even so observant. Now we said, you know, he needs a place to daven. A little daven there, way beneath his social station. You know. It's right after Sukkot. So I'll tell you the whole story. I mean, as much as I remember of it, just to give you some flavor. So a few months in, somewhere in the middle, I got a call from a notorious, how should we call him, Toin/Borer from Brooklyn. Notorious. I mean, he's one of the famous chevra. You know, calls me up. And I never spoke to him before or since. The guy wants to go to Bezdin. He's going to Bezdin. That means he's losing in court. He wants to go to Bezdin. You can't do that. If he would have wanted to go to Bezdin from the beginning, okay. But if Adam of Bezdin, the Bezdin of America really didn't exist on that basis so much. But he's saying he's 2-3 months into the court case started, Sukkot time, maybe before even. Now it's a few months in. I said, thank you very much. Hung up the phone. A little bit later, I got the officers in Gabon wanted to show, want to meet with me. I think it's the only meeting I ever attended in 43 years of any note. I don't go to board meetings, I don't go on. We have private meetings, a few people, but nothing like this. Why are you being so tough with this guy? The two sides to every story. So you're 100% right. I know both sides. There are two sides to every story. But it has to come to an end. And in my view, this is the end. But the two sides. Rabbi say, I'll give you three choices. One, convince him to give the get. Two, you don't like the way I'm handling the situation? No problem. I'll be the Rav. You'll hire a Dayan. Like they have a Doimitz. You'll hire a Dayan of Maritz Tzedek who'll paskin the Shilas. And then I'll step aside. Whatever he says goes. If he says the guy should be brought back to the shul, I'll be happy to give in to him. The third choice is that I'm your Aved. We shouldn't have an anarchy in our shul. Give him three choices. Well, suffice it to say, they didn't do choice number one. They didn't do choice number two. So I assumed I'm appointed as the Aved. A few years later, I spoke to Pasha Shoftim and said, you know, can I have anarchy? But I said, I was appointed to the Aved. So the guy says, whoa, who is he appointed? Who appointed him? I wasn't there. You know, he was another board member. Whatever it is. Kitz HaNimritz is going, the whole year is going by. It's from Sukkot, now it's almost Pesach. The yeshiva was only getting that year. Yeah, look it up on the sun. It's only getting. Tav Shin Nun. Before Pesach, I told the Chevra, listen, I'm in a tough situation in my community, and it's just one case, but there can be many cases like this. After Pesach, instead of learning more lumdus about Eidei Vesira, or who knows what, we're going to start discussing the issue of Get Me'usa, the last mission in the Masechta towards the end, and we'll try to figure out some kind of a solution. Good? So Pesach comes, Pesach goes, he's still not in the shul. Day after Pesach, come back from the yeshiva, you start the ninth parak. You know, the whole sugya is the Masechta getting about this. P.S. That week, Shkoch HaPratis, the judge issued a decision. She was a Jewish, non-observant judge, but she was well-coached. She said, I order that the property be split 50-50. However, if the husband will give his wife a get within 10 days, he'll get 55%. Instead of penalizing her husband for not giving a get, she rewarded him for giving a get. That's not a get, but it happens all the time, people giving money to people to give get. So, gave the get. I remember exactly, it was Rosh Chodesh Iyar, the day of the Siyum HaShas, in 1990. That Shabbat comes to shul. He was a prominent member of the shul, he was an officer. Told the gabbai, I wanted to give this man shlishi. He says to me, Rabbi, for 6 months, he's persona non grata. Now you want to give him shlishi? I said, absolutely. For 6 months, he wasn't giving his wife a get, so he was persona non grata. I gave him a get. He deserves shlishi. Shlishi, nothing less. Okay, good gabbai, follow the rabbi. Shlishi, next aliyah. And so, you know, after aliyah, some people come over, shake the rabbi's hand, some don't. I have no pain about it. I wasn't waiting. I jumped out of my seat and ran to shake his hand. He wasn't so happy shaking my hand at that point, you know. He shook my hand, he's a gentleman. And that's what happened. Meanwhile, he's happily remarried, she's happily remarried. There's a parsha of Gerushin in the Torah for a reason. Anyway, so because of these, we didn't stop learning though. We kept learning those, so we had into the sugya. And I discovered, it's a reminder, Maria Tovshin Mem Ches. 2 years before that, so I'm now on Iyar Tav Shin Nun. Articles written by Rabbi Tzvi Gartner, tremendous Talmud Chacham from America. He grew up in Boston, learned in Philadelphia Yeshiva. He's now a member of the Bezin of Rabbi Osher Weiss and Rabbi Nevinson. He's about two but they didn't. He's written a whole Sefer Get Me'usa this thick for Alter Poskim. He's written many articles. He's an editor of first of something called Yeshurun. Now he started a new thing called Tvunos, a big Talmud Chacham who I've been dealing with ever since then, since 1990, when I discovered him. He printed a Hatza'ah from Zalman Nechemi Goldberg. I wasn't even sure who he was at the time. About along the lines of what I said, but not, let me tell you what he said. The man should sign a ksuba. He's giving his wife every day the amount of money that it takes to live in a hotel. He thinks there's nothing wrong with that. How much is that? $50. Even back in 1988, $50, I'm not sure if it wouldn't give you a hotel for sure not. I don't want to give you anything. Anyway, so every day. But as long as she is living with him in the house, so she's merchel her obligation. But in case there's a problem, and she wants to get, then the obligation, she's not Michael anymore. And then, because instead of giving her $50 a day, you'll probably want to give her a get. Ad kan Reb Zalman Nechemi. With me so far? Good. So I didn't even know. I did not get in touch with him. So Reb Meir Goldzicht, Shalita, came that year. That was the first year he was here. As a visiting professor for a year or two in this yeshiva, Baruch Hashem. We're very fortunate. At least we are. I don't know, but that year or two is now, what is it, 28 or something like that? Comes up, Baruch Hashem. So he was a charusi of Zalman Nechemi. He was a very friend of Shlomo Zalman from Shari Chesed. He said, I'll call for you. He said, I'm here. Okay, so yeah, I call him up. He treats me like as if I'm some kind of godel, and he's left a nobody. Mamish, well, he knows everything. I don't know anything. We have this conversation. I started corresponding with him, back and forth. I said, does anybody do this? He said, not that he knows about. I told him about how to get Rabbi Gartner, back and forth. Then there was a group called the Orthodox Caucus, which was a group of people trying to get things done. They have two things to their credit. They have two credits. One, they helped me with the prenup. And two, I guess in a sense equally important, they helped reorganize the Bezin of America to make it a much more significant Bezin with the Torahs, etc., etc. That's going back now almost 20 years. With me, my situation is going back, as we know, with the math, 26 years. Then they folded. Okay. Everything has a reason. So I realize I have to have face-to-face diplomacy. It's limited what you do on the phone. So I traveled to Eretz Yisrael, what they call it. Then the Bein HaZmanim, Bein HaSemesterim, they call it now, in January 1991. And to deal with Rav Zalman Nechemia. I met him for the first time. He's very gracious to me. Unbelievable, Anuf. Said, you want to make a takana for all of Klal Yisrael, you can't rely on one person. Can't. You have to go ask somebody else. I said, who should I ask? Anyone you tell me to. Go to Tel Aviv and speak to Rav Chaim Tzimbalist. I knew the name. He taught here in our yeshiva. You knew that? He married an American woman. His wife is a sister of Rabbi Chanan Adler's mother. He's Rabbi Chanan's uncle. And he came to here. She was getting some kind of a degree. So he stayed here and he taught in what they used to call then TI. We call it the IBC. He was the Bechir HaYeshivas. He was the Ilui of the Chevron Yeshiva. Comes from a very distinguished family, symbolist, Rishul HaRadna. It's a very, very distinguished family. It turns out that my daughter-in-law, Huva, is related to them also, through Rabbi Kirstein, or Saba, was married to a symbolist. It's a very hush of a family. When he came to Hebron, he was this short. He's still a short man, but he was before Bar Mitzvah. And when everyone knows something, they went to him. So Zalman Nechemia was his colleague in Hebron. So go to him. He's a dayan in Tel Aviv. He retired. You have to retire at a certain age of dayanut. I think 70, you have to retire. So he retired some years back. And when Rabbi Yoshev needed a dayan to handle the most complex case maybe that was ever handled, the Ponevizhid in Torah, and he needed a shalish, he was chosen. Rabbi Yoshev chose him. He had every dayan in the country, who was had to be retirement age, because otherwise you couldn't sit in it. I don't think you're allowed to sit in the boroughs if you're sitting in the Rabbanu. But there are many, many retired dayanim. They hit 70 or 65. They're all retired. Him, he wanted to have Chaim Tzimbalist. So you can sit in the number one. That's what it means. Sure enough, he took a stand. They started fashmutzing him. He's a Mizrachist. He's in the Rabbanut. Rabbi Yoshev had to rise to his defense. Whatever. So he said, go to him. Oh, I never met him before. I knew him. I remember his picture from the graduation journals here. He was a rabbi here in the IBC. He was walking the same halls as I was walking. I think so. I'm pretty sure when I was a Talmud here, that was a tkufa when he was 50 years ago. I think he was here as a just newly married man with an American wife, and he has to do something, so he had a position here to teach. I come to see him in Tel Aviv. I show him what Rizam Nechemes Maimer from the Moria looks at it and says, I don't like I don't like it. Instead of doing it this way, I want to do it the other way. And he turned it around upside down. Instead of having an obligation from the get-go for marriage, which is what Rav Zalman Chaim had written originally, no, he wants the obligation to take effect only at the time that they're no longer living together in the same house. Then it should take effect. That makes much more logical sense. He said, a husband is obligated to take care of his wife. If they're together, he takes care of somebody by paying the bills. If they're no longer together, he has the very right to accept upon himself an obligation to support her. And if you want to write down X dollars a day, that's fine. Okay. So, I left this, remember I picked him up in the, had a car then, borrowed a car, picked him up in his bed in Tel Aviv, took him to his house, and says, it's from Tel Aviv, I'm driving back to Yerushalayim, I said, it's all for naught. All for naught. I've been working on this thing since Pesach, or the previous year, now it's in January. And Rav Zalman Chaim said this way, he says this way, so it's going to come to nothing. So I went back to Rav Zalman Chaim, told him what happened. He said, thinks for a minute and says, okay, we'll do it his way. Another Anivus point for Rav Zalman Chaim. He printed the other way around, or it's in print for 2 years plus. Well, do it his way. So, but I had to go now to rewrite it. So he had to, because see, he wrote one draft, another draft. And they say, what's happening till those thoughts, this is all going. I was a rabbi in a shul, a family. So I left on the Motzi Shabbos, and I maxed to say that for 2 weeks minus today. I was going to come back Thursday night, a week later. So that Shabbos I spent with my oldest sons were in Kerem B'Avna. I spent the Shabbos in Kerem B'Avna. It's a nice Shabbos with my family, with my boys. For those who know a little bit of history, that week, the second week, was a week of incredible tension in Eretz Yisrael. It was a week of the Gulf War. You're probably too young to remember. Maybe the rabbi remembers, maybe you remember, but I don't know who remembers. Bush the Elder said to Saddam, if you don't get out of Kuwait by January 15th, we're going to attack you. You've read history books, right? Everyone knows about this? Well, January 15th was that week, and people are getting very antsy. And they of course, because Saddam said, push the logic. If America attacks us, we're going to, of course, attack Tel Aviv. I mean, push it. The logic is ironclad, right? Is there any shiloh about that? So everyone was getting nervous, and that chemical weapons, don't ask. So, and in the middle of all this, I'm trying to get this prenup done. Back and forth. So, I remember that second week that I'm there, there were, on Monday, once I was there, Ari says Shirim for Yeshiv Talmidim. I was in Yavne for Shabbos, and that Monday I went to Har Etzion. I remember my boys were with me. We went to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal's apartment, and Rav Amital Zatzal picked us up and drove us to the Gush. We have interesting conversations on the way, fascinating. And then we took a bus back to go to these. It was Shovavim. It's huge Atzeres Tefillah by the coast of the Maravi that we should be safe, that they shouldn't kill us with their scuds, with their weapons. I think there were 80,000 people there for a mincha, Yom Kippur, whatever, Shovavim, with all kinds of Kabbalah, Mach Shemai. After that, someone was going to show me the tunnels, you know, at the time. People were not, everyone was running home. They weren't, that was Monday. Tuesday, that was the Chassidish Atzeres Tefillah. You know how it goes there. Tuesday was the yeshivasher at Sarah's Tefillah by the coastal as Yom Kippur Cup, because Wednesday was Rosh Chodesh. Okay. So now I'm back to Rav Zalman Chaim. I have to go back to the Tzimbalist to get his approval on the latest draft. That day, Tuesday, was I fasted. Well, I'm not from the fasters. I think fasting is bad. It takes, But the Rabbanut said, you gotta fast. That's gonna shoot him. The gavas with gas masks. Ah. So I fasted. It was Erev Rosh Chodesh Shvat, I believe. And that day, they had something called Operation Torah Shield, where they hired a plane. Everyone's running away from Israel. 400 people got on a plane to go to Israel. Ooh. And there was a group going to the airport to greet them, that they're coming, they're going against traffic. So I was on that bus. I remember with Rabbi Blachman together, went on that bus, and we come to the airport. And there's a matzav there in the airport. From there, everyone went back to Yerushalayim. I went to Tel Aviv to have symbolists. There was a bus. I no longer had a car. The bus took me from the airport directly to almost to his block. So in Tel Aviv. And I come to him and I show him the revision. Made her aura here, her aura there. Okay. He's willing to sign on this with the revisions. Nope. He takes me to the bus stop, to the Tachanah Merkazit, back to Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim is way before the light rail. So at night, the buses from out of town would go down to Yafo. We can get off. So I was staying in Rehov King George and Yafo. The streets are empty. No, that was panicking. That was January 15th. No one wants to be in the streets. Okay. Meanwhile, I have to get Zam Nechem's final approval, no matter what, before I go home. I'm supposed to go home on Thursday night. I can't wait till the very last day. Who knows? Be a war. So I call Zam Nechem on Wednesday. I'm busy. I'm running shul. If you want to come with me to talk to me, you only have to come with me in the car. I'm going to Shalavim tonight to say a shir. Meet me in my house. We'll talk in the car. Good. So I was staying at Rabbi J. Marcus. I had an apartment in Lincoln, that's where I was staying. He gave me some stationery. So on the back of the envelope, he writes that nusach, which is the final draft for that period of time. On the back of the envelope, Young Israel, Staten Island, and that's why I still have it somewhere. That was his draft of that agav. Since we're telling stories. So we have to tighten the syllabus, Rabbi. But meanwhile, he went to get me the stories. And through the stories, you remember some of the dinner, maybe. So what happened was, we're coming back, being driven by a driver. And Zam Nechem is in the front. And myself and another fellow came back. We were both going to Harnof. And Zam Nechem lives in Shikun Chabad in town. So when we're coming to Yerushalayim, we said, please take the Rav home first. And he'll double back and take us to Harnof. Zam Nechem says, no way. He's taking you home first. Harav, harav. Din Mefurash, what's he talking about? Din Mefurash, he has to take us. Sure, he said. If two people want a bench, so they bench, the one has to go. If one wants a bench, you have to listen to the two. So you have two now, I know if I'm one of them. So the driver listened and took us home. It's completely deserted. This is now Wednesday night. I walk into the house, and my mother-in-law says, tell me, you have a gas mask? I was leaving the next night. A gas mask. Who needs a gas mask? I'm one foot out the door. My mazel. 3 or 4 in the morning, they awoke. They wake me up. Oi! They attacked. And Saddam is going to send us scuds. Come out! And the government says, don't leave the house. So that morning, that Thursday morning, my father-in-law, who was a minion fanatic, never missed a minion. He's a good citizen, didn't leave the house. So I'm going to leave the house. So I also davened. Kidding. I got a call from El Al. The plane was supposed to leave at 1 a.m., It's leaving at 5 p.m., 8 hours early. So I said, I can't leave the house. So I don't know how I'm going to get around. So I got a call from a couple that was in my shul for a couple of years. They were a very wonderful couple. And they said, can you take some mail back for us? What was there? I must have visited him. Yeah, but how am I going to? I'm not supposed to leave the house. Cash, the yacht. We'll come, we'll take you, we'll take you to the airport. So they came from where they lived to Harnov, picked me up, gave me the mail, took me to the airport. I got on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They were very smart. That night was a Scud. Had it at 1 a.m., probably wouldn't have flown because it was Scuds flying in Tel Aviv. But I didn't know, I was already in the plane. So we're about to land. And somehow, I remember Rav Goldich, Rav Meir was on the flight with me, and they still told me some kind of. They were able to somehow get you know, American news in English. No one understands what's meant. You want English? Yeah. Listen to this. Are they chemical weapons or not chemical weapons? So listen carefully. Scars and television, but they're not not chemical weapons. Okay. I mean, this is all my story, but Derech Agav. Took me a whole year from that time to go through all the lawyers in this country. This court with many lawyers, back and forth with Rabbi Gartner, Rabbi Zalman Nechemiah, to finally try to get to a final conclusion. I went back a second time, the next year, paying a semester in. This time I got him to sign a piece of paper which someone typed up for me, ironically, who typed it up for me, someone who's now strongly opposed to this, but he's related to me somehow, so it was in Harnoff. He typed it in, we had a typewriter. And he has a few emendations with my own hand, but it's signed by five people. Signed by first by Zalman Nechemiah, signed it. Just signed his name. The symbol that says, I agree, signed his name. Rabbi Avadi Yosef said, I need mask and matzah and al, but he put a date on it. Chof ches shvat tov shenun beis. Without a date, no one signed his name. And I came back to America. Rabbi Libis Zal from the Igud Rabbanim was considered the expert in Gittin. And Rabbi Schwartz Shlita, they signed that five names on it. When I was in Eretz Yisrael just 2 weeks ago, I met Rabbi Yitzhak Yosef, and I gave him a copy of this. He had never seen it. His father's handwriting on this hesked. Wow. Anyway. Good. So it took a little while for the lawyers to translate it. And originally it was actually two separate forms. It was an arbitration form and an assumption of obligation form. Yes?
Why did Rabbi Yitzhak listen to that, like the other suggestion?
He felt it was too closely tied to the get. What do you talk to the get? The way this way feels, it's just nothing to do with the get.
You avoid the asmachtish.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You do avoid the asmachtish. So as a matter of fact, Rabbi Bleich Shlita, to his great credit, after he said it's an asmachta problem, said, you know, but you can just turn it around a little bit. And he reworded our agreement the other way around. That I obligate myself every day this amount of money, unconditionally, and then, but she forgives it as long as she's in the house. He went back to Rabbi Nechemiah's old form. Had the milas of both. As a matter of fact, I have two talmidim who reworded their prenups to satisfy Rabbi Bleich's criteria. I have no problem with that. It's much clumsier. In other words, in terms of logic, it's clumsier. It's obviously clumsier. Rabbi Bleich is never bothered by clumsiness. He has things that are a million times more complicated than some of his prenups with sages of Spain and all kinds of things. But I'm trying to get things done, you know, tachlis, trying to make it as streamlined as possible. So the asmachta, in my view, is overcome either because it's not an exaggeration or because it's kinyan miachshav bebezin choshuv. And even though the Rambam may hold it's no good, but according to the Mechaber and the Ramah, that's not a problem. So in my opinion, the asmachta is overcome. We have a letter which was just printed for the first time, a thing called Tfudo, so Rabbi Gartner published it. He didn't have a copy, I had the original. The Rabbi Symbolist wrote to Rabbi Gartner way back when, Tavshin and Beis. Number one, you can know the Rabbi Zalman Nechemiah. It's not a smachta problem. Number two, I discovered in Divrei Gaonim that you have a certain nusach. They say that I'm doing this. Not just the low cost smach. That's not every shot the low cost smach. That won't work. But you say the beferish and more beferish and nusach. That anyway, that the goes back to Knesset Gdola says that it's okay for sure. So as a matter of fact, one of these days we got to put that phrase into this too. Why not? A belt and suspenders. If you do that, it's no problem. So that has been just now printed in a thing called Tfunos. You can probably get in the library. Rabbi Gartner is the editor, so he printed the one page and said, "Old Chazon Lamoed." He wants to print the whole history of the prenups, which I never really wanted to do. When I went to Rav Yashav a second time, it was about that. That's how I started. They wanted to print it in Maria. Maria wouldn't print it unless it was Rav Yashav ever says, come. And he didn't. He said, we'll print both sides. No. So I never printed it. Rav Yashav said not to print this. I didn't print it. Rav Yashav's psak was certainly, from my perspective, but keep the tug for as long as he was alive. I never printed it. I have a little kuntres in Hebrew and English, which I wrote up so many years ago, but I never printed it. If people got their hands on it and attacked it or supported it or spoke about it in various journals, but I myself never printed it. Even in my own sefer, when I made reference to it, I still didn't print it. I said, read Rabbi Black's sefer. You'll look there, you'll see what he wrote. Okay?
Are they used in Israel?
No, so we'll come to that if I have a chance. I don't know, I'm supposed to end in 20 minutes. It's not stories today, but the stories are also important. Kitz and Nimritz, after it started working, I went to two of my very, very esteemed senior rabbinic colleagues from Brooklyn, New York. This Brooklyn is a pain. I mean, Libus was from Brooklyn, but I went to Rabbi David Cohen and to Rabbi Feivel Cohen, the two giants of the Brooklyn world, and they both said, you don't see a problem, but not happening in our world. Despite the incredible bloodshed that takes place there, with if you know the Chaim Berlin world, there was a bloody case going on right then with the marriage. It was terrible, really terrible. As a matter of fact, when I spoke to that Hasidic Rav today, he said, oh, there's so much terrible things going on with the Gittin. He knows about that. If they could save some of that, it'd be a good idea. Anyway, back. So we start using it. After a while, it had to be redone. It had to be put into the same document for technical reasons. We never had $50 a day. We had $100 a day from the beginning. After 10 years, they said it's not enough. $150 a day. And fine. So good. It was sort of under the radar. I don't want to make any publicity about it. Well, let's skip 20 years and come to much more recent Leverdicker history. So last summer, a year and a half ago, some Avreich who wanted to make his own prenup, wanted to knock down our prenup, started running around to various rabbanim why it's no good, and he got into Rabbi Sternbuch. Rabbi Sternbuch wrote a 5-6 page letter that he mentioned us by name, that it's no good. Why? In the first line, because they were relying on Knas Machmas Asma of the Ramah, Kufla Medal. I mean, you can't do that for 10 different reasons, 3 different reasons. Of course, the first line was a complete untruth. We're not relying upon that at all. Okay, so I figured like this. Rabbi Sternbuch deserves that I go to him and explain to him. So I wasn't, because I know exactly what day it was. It was Gimel Cheshvan. Right, that's just last year. I was there for my grandson's bar mitzvah. That was the same day that Mechatenis does Levaya, Mrs. Machlis. All this happened the same day. And I'm tumbling all this, meeting with Rabbi Sternbuch at 1 o'clock in his house with Rabbi Gartner. And I had my son-in-law and a grandson all coming in to see him. They told me, you have to speak to him in Yiddish. He speaks the King's English. He's from London. Got to speak to him in Yiddish. Otherwise, you know, you have to... I spoke to him in Yiddish, okay. No problem. Riot. Everybody spoke English, speaking him in Yiddish. Not even Hebrew. Yiddish. So I explained to him that that's not the Kavanah here. The Kavanah is it's a support agreement. The only difference is that in a regular support agreement, the three problems. Who's going to enforce it? How much it is? And is it really obligatory once they're separated? If you look in Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezra Siman Ayin, Sif Yud Beis, it says that if they're separated, must he support her? Depends whose fault it is. If it's his fault, as a supporter. If it's her fault, he need not support her. Of course, the problem is, in our situation, who's going to determine it? It'll take 20 years till they figure out whose fault it is. That's why we have no fault. In America, there's no fault. Who's going to be bothered? It's crazy. So that's why we're plugging up that hole. In case it's not obligated to be Iker Adin, one of the rabbis had written, we don't want a new prenup for it. Just sign the ksuba, write it in English, notarize it, and you'll have to pay the money. Not so simple. Doesn't say how much. Doesn't say what happens if it's her fault that they break up and the ksuba does not apply. Bekitzer. All right. So, and we said that, and the sum is not exaggerated. He writes, that's ridiculous. It's a knas. $150, that's ridiculous. So we started explaining to him that in the circles that we travel, it's not so ridiculous. Someone want to raise it. It's not enough. But the good rabbi lives, it's not enough. For sure not enough. Okay, so it depends where. Okay. So Vosam mirfadint. He wants to know, what have we gained by that? If it's not an exaggerated sum. So explain to him that you're right. He's obligated in many cases anyway. In some cases, he's accepting obligation. Even if it's not so much money, but he'd rather give a get than even give that amount of money. All right, back and forth. We wrote up a protocol in Hebrew of what had happened. Rabbi Gartner wrote it up. And I tried to get Rabbi Sternberg's sons, who were there, two sons who were there, to sign. To validate that this is what happened. They don't want to get involved. Okay. They don't want. I can't force them to sign it. So you have to take it up either 2-8 and Rabbi Gartner and myself who did sign it. That's what happened. No one's, I don't think that's gonna be makash. That's what we were there. In any event, now some other history of fairly recent vintage. I was in Eretz Yisrael, it was 2 years ago. I don't know, 3 years, I don't know what it was. And someone discovered that I was there. Someone knows my son Rafal, knows he works for the Mishpat HaMishpatim. There's some kind of committee, and the two rabbis and the chief rabbinate are on it. So, we had a meeting once on a Friday. One of them couldn't come, his name was Rabbi Be'eri. Everybody ever learned in Camp Yavneh? Diane Be'eri. He's retired now. He had our biggest problem. He says, it's the knas. Why is it a knas? Because if you're not obligated by Torah law, by definition, it's a knas. Even one nickel? Yeah, even one nickel is a knas. Not like a Bishterbach. Bishterbach says it's a knas only if it's an exaggerated sum. He's holding on the Pope. He says, even if it's a nickel, it's a knas. The other rabbi is Rabbi Malka, also from the rabbi. He's a sitting dayan. This is a Bayat Vegan, I believe. He's married to an American, I believe. And he said, no, it's not a knas. So they're at loggerheads.
If it's her fault, then it's a knas.
Right. If he wouldn't be coming to her, I'll be ikir adin, even a nickel is a knas, he said. That's not Rabbi Shlomo said. He didn't say that one. Rabbi Shlomo did ask us, well, what happens if he doesn't have the money or if he doesn't live such a high... So we said to him, listen, the Bezin would not impose an obligation above and beyond the higher of the two standards of living. Namely, her family standard of living and his present standard of living. That's called Ola Imo Veina Yoredes Imo. It's Mefurash Gemara. So if it would be less than that, we wouldn't oppose such a high number. We'd lower it. But if he doesn't have the money? We said, so Rabbi Gartner says, we're not going to lower it. He has the money. He has the money. He has no money. Yeah. What is it? Give her a get. If he gives her a get, she could marry somebody else and get the money. He has the ability to solve the problem. That's the equivalent of having the money in the bank. So they're going back and forth. Is that correct? Not correct. He didn't say no. Rabbi Shlomo knows how to say no. He didn't say no to Rabbi Gartner. I said, he hears what he's saying. So we felt that in that kind of case, we would not have to relieve him of his obligation. He said, ainly. Okay, ainly to give a get. But if we did agree, if it's higher than either standard of living, we would give less. We thought it's obvious that way. Recently, someone wanted to do it in Eretz Yisrael. My Talmidim, they're ready to get married off their children. And they don't trust anybody else, so we did a little homework. We reduced the sum from $150 a day to $75 a day. That's what it costs to live. I'm talking about Ramat Bet Shemesh, I'm talking about in Bote Ungarin. Alright? But we added, with the quote of Sternbuch, that the Bezin will lower it if they, he's right, we would do it anyway, but we put it in Bichsav. It's going to take a while until it gets into the Bichsav of this regular boilerplate of the American version as well. It will get there, Mitzvah Hashem. That's what we're holding.
Rabbi, I hate to believe in the point, but what if the other one, the first suggestion of Zalman that had to solve that problem too, if you accepted upon yourself from the beginning?
Right. The Ramah says it's good b'di'evit, but
if you accept to find yourself in the get-go, I'm obligating myself.
So Rashi says, "I'm nechem." He says, "What are you talking about knas? It's a ksuba. We read last week's parsha. Shnei gedoyizim. Every day shnei gedoyizim. That's where Black quotes that. Shnei gedoyizim every single day. Hey, it's a laugh of mizaynus. One person, Rivka Meina, shnei gedoyizim a day. Maybe Lamare is not that fancy. Shnei gedoyizim a day. What is this?" That's what he said. But you're right. I'm not saying you're wrong. But just, anyway, There are a number of other technical matters with the prenup, which we'll discuss in the next 10 minutes. One of them is as follows. The wife has earnings. Technically speaking, Masha Kansa Isha Kona Baila. So what good does the prenup do? They split up. She pulls out a piece of paper. You owe me $150 a day, $50,000 a year. But Vakasha, honey, take it. But I get all your earnings. And these women today making multiples of $50,000 a year. So that's going to destroy the whole purpose of this whole document. What's going to be? So in the document it says, he waives his rights to earnings. It's in here. The problem is, you're looking at Suvas Pei Gimel, you can't do that before the Erusin. I don't know if you spoke about this before. Right, Rishon Karelis is, I told about it, right? It's been Erusin and Nisuin. So the best thing we could do is over here, it says Beferish. If you look carefully, look what it says. It's in the top of page 2 if you have it. He obligates himself $150 a day. Okay? I waive my halachic rights to my wife's earnings for the period that she's entitled to the above stipulated sum, and I recite that I shall be deemed to have repeated this waiver at the time of our wedding. How does that work? Can you have our daughter's balded before the fact? The answer is yes. If you look carefully in the smart Simon Lamed Aleph, that's Reb Zalman Nechemes Mokar. I have a different Mokar. This was done apparently in Europe. They had these things, and if you look carefully in the Shuvas back and forth, I think in the Chavis Yor, and Avodas HaGershuni, quoted by the Pischei Shuvah a little bit. Kind of, that's what he used to do then. They would admit to things before the Erusin that they, in effect, admitted. It should be considered admission for later on. You want to be machmir, you have to do it under the chuppah. I think I mentioned Rabbi Nuchas, he wanted to do it under the chuppah. Okay, but that's not really feasible for most situations. My real reason is, aside from the fact that I believe this works based on the Avodas HaGershuni, etc., in my view, he's not entitled to her earnings at all in the first place. He's entitled to her earnings if she's knitting how much? X amount of knitting. If she knits more, it's called Hadofa Deat Chak. That's a machlokas, the mechaba and the bach. Is he entitled? And the bach writes the minigas that he's not entitled. He's not entitled. But that, she works in the home a little, an extra few hours. But to work outside the home to be a fancy lawyer or doctor, in my view, he's not entitled to that at all. She's not required to do that. It's a machlokas in the rabbinut these days. Is he entitled to those earnings or not? So my opinion is he's really not. We get stuck in a very fascinating halachic conundrum. He owes her $150 a day. Whether she owes him her earnings is a matter of some dispute. So what should we say? He has to pay her the money, and then she can keep the money on her end because Safik Mamun Lakula, Motzimecha Ve'ol Varaya. Or should we say no? He doesn't have to give her any money. Because although he owes her money for sure, since she may owe him money, which will offset, so forget, Hamotzi Mecha Ve'olav Arayan, he wouldn't have to pay her. That's a fascinating shayla. Paul can talk about it in the recent svar on the Mishpat HaKsuva. My view is that he is obligated, but others could disagree. That's where this sticky stuff comes with the waiver. You'll see a lot of verbiage after the obligation, and I'll tell you why it's here. It says, furthermore, wife-to-be waives her right, again, let's read from the beginning. The support obligation shall terminate if wife-to-be refuses to appear upon the due notice before the Bezdin of America, or in the event the wife-to-be fails to abide by the decision or recommendation to the Bezdin of America. Let's say, they tell her something, she doesn't want to come. She says, listen, the husband's off the hook, otherwise it's crazy. I have to pay her forever. No. He has a very easy way out. Come to Bezdin, she won't listen, you're off the hook. Furthermore, wife to be waives her right to collect any portion of the support obligation deteriorated to the set period between the date of a reasonable attempt to provide written notification to be that she intends to collect the above sum. Notarized signature. What's that all about? The following case. First, we had a case where someone said it's unconstitutional. Church and state. That was rejected by the Connecticut court. It's nothing to do with church. It's a purely civil monetary obligation. Then we had the following case, the real life case. In Maryland, there was a case of a couple that was breaking up. There was a prenup. That was $100 a day. So she calls him up. She wants to have a get. She knocks it. Hubby, you want to get? So I'll give you a get, whatever you want. Good, let's set up a bezin. Took 3 months till they actually got to the bezin. No one's fault, you know, till could be lawyers and dayonim. 3 months. Get to the bezin. I'll give the get today. No, she doesn't want it right now. She wants to go to the secular court first for all the other issues. 3 years takes till they finish everything. Good. They finish everything. He gives her a get. Shalom Yisrael. Next week gets in the mail a bill. $100,000 of back support. $100 a day, 3 years, $100,000. I said, what, are you crazy? She said, no, look at the documents, it says so. They come to the Bezdin. The Bezdin says like this. Two dayanim say that she's entitled to $10,000, not $100. Why 10? Because until they came to the Bezdin, the clock was ticking, and every day $100 for 3 months, it says $10,000. The third dayanim said, that's ridiculous. He wasn't storming to go to Bezdin. He was willing to go to Bezdin the first day. There was just technical stuff with the lawyers, with the dayanim, with the appointments. Okay. But 2-1, she gets $10,000. They both appealed. We have an appeal system in our Bezdin. He appealed. It's ridiculous. She put that $100,000. Rabbi Schwartz-Schlitter designated me as the appellate judge in this case. So, I was eyeing it a lot. I spoke to Rabbi Gartner, Shlita. I wrote a decision that she's entitled to. What's the guess? Zero. Correct. Zero. So now she's poor lady. She could have $10,000. Now she has zero. What she did? She went to secular court in Maryland to try to avoid my decision as being irrational. Arbitration, you can only get it out either based on corruption or irrationality. Irrational. So the judge in Maryland ruled, not only is this decision not irrational, it's a very appropriate decision based on blah, 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 blah. I got a haskama from the chief judge of Maryland. It's a very excellent prenup. It's an excellent thing. Just yesterday, Tuesday, I was supposed to be at the Din Torah yesterday at 5 o'clock. One of these situations, the end of marriage Din Torah. But I didn't have to come. Because on Tuesday, he gave a get rather than face the Bezdin. We're not forcing him. You can come to the Bezdin. She'll ask you $150 a day. You'll say yes, no, maybe, what? I don't know. He didn't want to do it. He gave a get. That's what we call a victory. Any questions? Maybe we can meet and write a syllabus because I'm maybe repeating myself. I'm going to have to sit down. We have two more sessions, is that correct? So we have to meet 1:10, then two more, one of the third sessions to make up for the time that we missed. The small items, so we'll go downstairs to Davin Mincha and the Beis Medrash because otherwise I'm not sure we'll have a minion. Okay, we'll stop here.